Is Preston Marshall from DARPA, and we'll speak about the many programs in this area that he's started. Thanks.
I didn't start. Todd, where's slides? I'm not good enough to do this.
No food.
I'm a government employee. I can't talk without slides. Okay, I want to talk about three of our three programs that are relevant to the topic NSF put out, and pass a couple stories on. One is that we're here. When the NSF topic first came out, I got lots of email that said, "Oh my God, NSF's going in competition with you." Well, if NSF can beat DARPA to the results, then they deserve to win, for one. But two, we really don't see it as competition. And what I want to do today is show you what we have as initiatives. And in many cases, we've really, I think, left major holes in the program where we see an NSF university type of approach can complete the work and really work on optimization, particularly in the case of XG. I'm going to be happy just to get from here to there with XG, whether it's optimal or not, and I'll declare victory. And we'll show you in more detail with BBN talks later. They'll show you exactly NSF goes here, you know, how we view the adaptive radio we're building, which is not truly cognitive. We don't think the spectrum community wants a cognitive radio, because that really means that every time you turn it on, there's a different thing. And that's probably really not what they want. So we're going to show you the adaptive radio and show you how we built the hooks to take the knowledge and awareness you get from the spectrum and truly support the evolution of cognitive radios, which is a really great challenge for NSF. Talk a little bit about a connectionless radio. That's a program very similar to the sensor topic described here. We took a look and realized we were building really cool sensors, really cool small radios, and we still needed diehard batteries to power them. And so we decided, you know, we really had to address energy and the real question of whether IP, V4, V6, whatever, is really an appropriate model in a highly energy-scarce environment. And look at some of the physical layers. And then lastly, a program we had an industry day on, and four people have asked me where the BAA on disruption-tolerant networking is. And the good news is it's here. The bad news is it's still here. We are doing some enhancements to this. We did Napoleon's Corporal, and it was clear to me what it meant, but not so clear to anyone else. But that will be coming out, I hope, within the week. But the due dates push out, so it just gives you some more time. The other not very subtle agenda today is that we have really collected a number of performing organizations that are working these research topics. And while they may not be the appropriate ones for Joe to try to get money to and to convince NSF to actually fund someone for profit, nevertheless, they could be good team partners to bring to bear a set of technologies and evolutions that we've done and bring it into the more academic types of programs that likely to fund in this program. So I'm going to run kind of a beauty contest for my performers. Several of them Joe already had on the agenda, Mark and BBN, talking about some of their work on XG. Others, I'm going to ask as I finish up to kind of stand up and tell you a little bit about what they're doing, and then you can sit and, you know, vote 9, 8, 7. But call them up, and if there's someone who you see would enhance your team to bring a lot of work we put into it and a lot of practical application, and this as an NSF topic is remarkably practical. Something they want something in 18 months. They want something. And you may well find that what we've invested in already brings something to the table. I have one last thing that I'll plug. If you really think these are cool programs and you'd like to be involved and you don't want to write proposals, we have four program managers at DARPA who do COM. Two of them are leaving. We won't have new programs in this area. That might be the NSF. It won't be competition. But if we don't get some more program managers in this intersection, we won't have these programs. So if you like them, come help run them. If you don't like them and you think they're stupid and you could do better, come become a PM and start your own programs. Either way, Mary, you can say a good thing about being there, right? That was a, okay. Well, one out of two. Which one? Okay, I think I said all that. The Talk 3 programs, Next Generation COM, that is our spectrum program. We've really worked a lot with the FCC. If you read Spectrum Policy Task Force and Peter Stahulis, there is a common legacy. The guy who originally was Spectrum Policy Task Force was the guy at DARPA who was originally XG, Paul Kolodzi. He started both, and not surprising that there's a remarkable consistency between them. Contextualist networking is our low-energy networking program, and then disruption-tolerant networking, DTN, very similar to IETF, delay-tolerant networking. We picked up what Vince Cerf and NASA were doing. I know it's beyond me. It's beyond you, too.
Yes, but yeah, ah. Here we have a PowerPoint mounted in the front and back of those two buttons. There you go. Like that.
They are?
Well, there we go.
Okay. XG. Let's see if it does it repeatedly three times in a row. FCC showed that chart. Everyone makes fun of it, but no one's had a good answer. We've done measurements. Mark McHenry did a lot of our measurements. We wouldn't publicly release them, so he went off and did them privately and released them himself. I guess he's going to talk a little bit about that. But the number, depending on where you look in the spectrum, anywhere from 40 to 90% of it's unoccupied. In XG, we wanted to farm that. We're developing four technologies, the ability to sense the spectrum, very low energy FFT device, fairly wide band, characterize it. One thing that's become really clear to us is that the idea of just looking for holes was really cool, but it's overly simplistic. You've really got to understand the signals and the signal environment you're in, somewhat like an electronic warfare system. We then have the network react, formulate a plan, and then lastly, the network adapt, because everything changes. Nodes move, your node moves, other nodes move, and so the adaption process of changing and reconfiguring that. Our objective in DARPA, those horrible go-no-goes everyone hates, is to demonstrate a factor of 10 increase in the number of radios that we can put in an existing spectrum. So if we take this approach to spectrum assignment and we fully populate something in XG, we want to demonstrate that if we then take the XG approach, we'll be able to put 10 times more radios in that piece of spectrum. And if you think that's vague, congratulate me, because I got a vague go-no-go, which is everyone's objective. New way to manage spectrum. Even if we didn't have a spectrum shortfall, if you think about the kind of network we want to deploy in the future, very clearly the idea of sitting and pairwise combining all of those nodes is an impractical concept. Most of the discussion has been on the FCC. I'm going to, for the moment, ask sympathy for the Department of Defense for thinking about the fact that everyone focuses on one government. Think what DOD faces when we go overseas. We have literally 200 different governments writing different rules and different principles. So one of the objectives in XG isn't just to farm more spectrum, or less important. It's to build a radio that has the ability to go anywhere in the world, understand the rules, follow those rules, enforce them on the behavior, and adapt. We're assuming if we build a set of spectrum adaption principles in the United States, by definition, Germany, France, Britain will form different rules. So we spent a lot of work not only just to find holes in the spectrum and fill them, but to think about how do you practically take that kind of capability and go worldwide with it. You know, anyone who takes their cell phone, and when I talked, when I was over to the British version of FCC Ofcom, they wanted to actually search people coming in the UK, bringing in family radios, US cell phones, Blackberries, all those kind of devices, because they don't fit their rules. So one thing we want to do in XG is build a radio that goes anywhere in the world, follows their rules. And that, as you'll see, that's a big driver in the technology we went after. One of the things we did was decide we didn't just want to build code. If you looked at the XG program 2 years ago, it was code. It was focused on how do you detect signals, build a network, put it in that place. As we marched on, we really realized that we also needed to bring another technology in, which was the ability to describe policy and policy language. Good measure of this, I was over at the COM communications bar a couple days ago, and you know, even in that fairly Luddite type community, 80% of the people raised their hands and they said they had 802.11 in their homes. Well, if you get your 802 little card that came with your 802.11, there's probably 15 pages in it for your 802.11b. Three or four of them tell you how to use it. The next 16 are all the different rules for all the different countries you go in with that 802.11 device, because it has to be different everywhere you go in the world. And so that's what we wanted to do with the policy language. We didn't want to hand out that long sheaf of notes. And so we had BBN, who's going to talk a bit later today, really focus on what is the most advanced technology to allow the FCC, Peter and the crew back there, to sit and conceive of writing their rules in a manner that the radio can reason on. Now, that may not be cognitive. We don't want it to learn, because it can't really learn about people it hurt. There's no way to get that feedback. But we can give a set of principles and let it reason about them, let it generalize about them, let it have the characteristics we would think of as class behaviors. and BBN will talk more, but we've basically adopted an ontology approach. Now, we're going to get that part of the way down the stream. But the amount of research to be done in that, particularly as the semantic web technology evolves, and therefore the underpinning technology we're using, is really open-ended and should go way beyond what we're doing here in DARPA, or doing over there in DARPA. In the implementation area, in parallel, we have three performers who we'll talk a bit later about what they're doing, and they're building the specific design, building the radios, building the sensors, building the signal processing, organizing the networks, and having those networks then go out and adapt the spectrum. So in the end of XG, we really expect to deploy two technologies, the core radio that could work in the United States, and then an overlay that lets us really start to think about policies as being something we can automate and we can carry around the world, and we can not just reflect this big, thick book of spectrum regulations that the FCC has developed and NTIA has developed, but actually allow them the machinery to not have to write a lot of rules, to write some principles, and then let the radios situationally decide what the right rule is in that case. And that is something that goes way beyond XG if we're successful. And it's something that we're going to essentially do an existence proof in DARPA. But it's something that needs 8 or 10 years and lots of dissertations and graduate students, several generations to work, I think. Key principles in what we're doing in XG, we want to make it suitable for a range of architecture implementations. At one end, the GNU radio kind of thing, that the ham radios are building a couple $100. At the other end, the military's heavy iron, our JTRS and future systems. We want to be independent of the radio technology. We want to be independent of military and application. We're doing a lot of work, frankly, proselytizing this concept overseas. We would like to see Europeans and all adopt it, because if the DoD doesn't get any benefit if we get spectrum just in the United States, because that's not what we want to operate. So we are doing a lot of work to get the international community to buy into the principle of automated policies, of automated interference avoidance. Hopefully the cellular telephone, the European Cellular Telecommunications Group, World Wireless Research Federation, will be carrying it forward as one of the features in 4G or 5G cell phone standards. We're trying to develop a boundary around an interference-preserving core set. What are the fundamental functions that do interference avoidance, and then what are functions outside of that to do optimization? If we can partition them, then we open the opportunity to have a rich set of optimizing algorithms within the framework of a provable interference avoiding framework. And we think that's important. The FCC can then, FCC and TIA regulators can essentially approve a small portion of the radio that guarantees it doesn't interfere and enforces those rules, and leave open the opportunity to really explore a lot of different optimizing techniques, network organizations and all, and have a boundary that we know doesn't, the optimizing techniques can't possibly cause the radio to suddenly become interfering. That way we can build one piece and apply it with a variety of different technologies. We've developed a set of abstract behaviors to describe our system so that we can have a model that number of companies can develop to, one that is not specific to physical or link layer. We have a process that's ongoing on the internet now of requests for comments, somewhat like the original IETF, except we're moving much faster. We're running it out of DARPA with BBN, but everything is going out for comment. Microsoft and Intel in particular have been very involved with us in working these. Because if we're successful, one thing we would like to do with XG is not end up with beta VHS. There's probably a lot of good solutions. If we go to the regulatory community with 20 different solutions, nothing will happen. So there's a certain advantage in people who would like to do opportunistic spectrum of getting behind some core set of principles that regulators can adopt and have some belief that they're covering the community of interest. So we would like to see this RFC process not just be a one-way dialogue of what we're doing, but to pick up reaction from the community and feed it back. To think a little bit about it, think of a box of frequency sharing. We're going to take and open something up. If we've got policies, we're going to start with a small little area. We're going to prove we can get an existence proof in DARPA this big. I just need to prove I've got an intersection of waveforms, policies, and capability in my XG. Then, once we've done that, we then have the opportunity to do the research to go back to the FCC and say, our initial assumptions were very conservative. We have learned we can open this up. We put 20 dB margin. We can put 5 dB margin. So DARPA will finish here. We're going to open up the opportunity to really think about what are the new policies that would really be built around spectrum sharing devices. What are the new types of sensors? We've got a very, I'd say, a relatively crude sensor we're buying from Rockwell Collins. But if we're successful in XG, then we create a market for very, very fast FFTs, and they can increase capability. The faster the FFT, the better the XG device is. And then lastly, and closest to my heart, is almost all the radio technology we have today is radio technology that was built around fixed waveforms that were built for fixed allocations. They're contiguous. They were assumed that there was a god somewhere who allocated them frequencies. And so if we're successful in XG, we open up the opportunity to think about completely different kind of waveforms and spectrum access methods that optimize around an opportunistic radio rather than a fixed one. And so we've got a small amount of research we're doing that in Raytheon, but it really is a whole new set of RF challenges and RF technology that could be applied. And basically, these are all exciting areas, and we're not doing any of them because our job is to get the existence proof and start the ball rolling, and then DARPA gets out. Right before something succeeds, DARPA steps out. And so these are all topics for research, and part of the reason I'm here is to really encourage it, not because it's competitive with my program, but it's really the logic. If we get the world working these problems, then we're a long way towards actually succeeding in our goals, which is not to be the inventor of this technology, but is to get it out there and deploy and helping the military. Future. We started this program, 3 years ago? It was FCC will never let you do it. NTIA will never let you do it. It was really pie in the sky. Since then, it's almost become non-controversial. It's just a question of how, or else Peter back there doesn't succeed in his spectrum policy task force, but I think he will. Therefore, this is going to happen, and the question is how is we as a development and research community really assist it. We have our DARPA program. We think it's a wonderful framework to build. I'm going to introduce some of my XG contractors, and if you see them as someone who can help you build a research topic, so much the better. Immediate needs, we're working on these, getting some policies with the FCC that allow us to start to work these radios and with NTIA, developing the basic sensing and adaption technology, but far term, we open up a whole new kind of radio and applications for radios we've really never thought about. Wireless. Okay, XG contractors, BBN's going to talk a bit later. System integration, Lockheed Martin, Sensor Designs, Rockwell Collins, and then Raytheon and Shared Spectrum are doing some advanced technology. And so when I'm done, I'll ask each of those companies to talk a little bit about what they're doing. If there's someone you'd like to partner with, I'm sure they'd be more than happy to talk to you. Two other areas of program. Next one's connectionless, and this is really key to that sensors topic. We have taken essentially existing radios built for relatively high duty cycle, and we've tried to apply them to build sensor networks. We think sensor networks are a fundamentally different kind of radio. They typically have short duty cycles. They sit with nothing to report, and then suddenly they need a lot of instantaneous bandwidth. We were looking in DARPA. We've built almost nanoscale kinds of sensors that can detect impacts of chemicals on a single band gap of a single transistor. They're obviously nano-small. We've done a lot of work with chip-scale radios, single radio chip, monolithically constructed, everything you want. But yet, when you put them into a system, we end up needing a whole die-hard battery. I have a really nice program called Wolfpack. There's some stuff out on the web. Wolfpack device about this big. Just deploy it out. Our demo version is a 96-pound battery. Just to power it during the demo, most of that power goes to the radio. BAE guys are shrinking back. I'm sort of embarrassed. But most of that power goes to the radio. So we put this program together because we really realized we would never get our vision of unattended sensors deployed if we couldn't address the amount of radio energies used. We believe that there's a saving up 10 to the fourth in the amount of energies radios use. And our go-no-go, you see, we're not really sons of vision. Our go-no-go is only 10 to the 2.5 in the design, and then we would like to get 10 to the 10 squared in the end program. Some of the technologies we're interested in developing are the ability to pre-compute, pre-correct waveform, frequency, timing, and phase for instant acquisition and synchronization. To some extent, our argument in this program is we build radios, we always have built networks, and we want to use high duty cycle. typically, you know, if you're not using 50-60% of a line, obviously you need less line, less bandwidth capacity. So we have built and sized radios so that they're fairly heavily contended. Once you have fairly heavily contend them, you need to have MAC layers. Once you have MAC layers, you generate traffic. Once you generate traffic, you generate latency. And so you really get into self-defeating process, in large part because we think of a radio as being 1 watt, 2 watts, 5 watts. A lot of that's driven by the requirement to acquire and maintain a channel. So in this program, we said, well, what if I never acquired to maintain the channel? What if I just used power when I had information? Then I shouldn't be afraid of every radio being 100 megabits. I just get the capacity I want. Once I build every radio to have 100 times the capacity individual user needs, I don't need a MAC layer. At least I don't need a heavy one. So I don't need a MAC layer. I got rid of 2/3 of my traffic. Once I get rid of 2/3 of my traffic, all my other problems start going away. So its argument is if we really rethink what the radio is, it allows us to go and make some very different design choices down the pipe. Processor intensive. The guys who put together internet in the days when, you know, we didn't even have PCs, really. We had DEC 8s and DEC 11s. They built a system that was very simple. Essentially, the wireless community has adopted the IP model without a lot of conscious thought, just because it was there. You know, we're wireless. We're not quite as good as people with wires, but we're trying to be. So we've adopted this model without any reason to believe it's the right model, because we have incredible processor resources that we can do. And Moore's Law says we'll have even more, and they cost very little energy. The energy to overcome Shannon is fixed. There's nothing we can really do until the universe really cools. But the energy to do processing is something that will continually better. So if we can trade energy to overcome Shannon for energy in devices, then it's a really winning proposition. And it's one that will get better every year. And so that's the premise behind connectionless. Using available knowledge of state, phase, and transition, transitioning the waveforms to a multiple acquisition program. And this one was one we just wanted to drop kick all the network assumptions. I don't know how many of them will turn out to be right. But just go in and say, if you built a radio from scratch, you weren't bound by IP, you weren't having to mimic BGP, you weren't stuck with MNAs, you weren't stuck with IPv4 or V6 or acquisition waveforms. If you took all those rules away, what's the right radio to build? And so I think it's a really exciting program. I'll talk to you a little bit about our performers, if I move forward in the right direction. So if you think about link formation, if you're an RF kind of guy, you think of all the things we do to set up a link and to maintain it just to send one packet. You really got to say, is this really necessary? Most of these, if you look at them, really are time. And other programs we have at DARPA, MEMS atomic clocks, very, very narrow band, 10 to the minus 15th accuracy in time. Well, if you know time to 10 to the minus 15th, think of the radio you can build. Because I don't have to synchronize. If I know where people are, I know how far apart they are, I can create signals at people in the right phase, right frequency, right everything. Most of what we have in a radio goes away. All those phase lock loops disappear. And so that is the core program that we're doing. We're starting down the pike. We've got a lot of performers. Looks almost like an NSF program. Lots of different performers, different approaches, some universities and some companies. So I've sort of covered it. We're going to try to get towards a magnitude reduction in energy. Build ad hoc networks that don't form subnets, so they don't look like IP networks. And we think this is really the key. If you get rid of acquisition waveforms, then you get back to doing circuit switching again. We don't do circuit switching because we form networks that look like IP. They form little stars and cluster heads and all. A lot of that's because we acquire signals. And once we acquire signals, we don't ever want to lose that guy because it takes us so much energy to acquire him to begin with. So if I never have to acquire him, I don't have to form cluster heads. And we think this is really the way to go. If you want to get a sense that we're doing radios wrong, not to pick on a particular program, there's a DoD program, and we're just killing ourselves on how to implement multicast. How do you make radios do the IP equivalent of multicast? Let's think about it. What's the one thing radios do really well? Is broadcast. And yet, because we wrapped ourselves in an IP view of the world, we can't seem to know how to make a radio multicast because we've gotten so trapped. Some of those are probably for good reasons, but others aren't. And so in this program, we really wanted to challenge the community to think about this. You know, why have we bought into the IP model, hook, line, and sinker? I'm really popular with the IP meetings. So baseband coherence, phase tracking at the physical layer, different detection model. FPGAs can try lots of different acquisition assumptions in parallel at relatively low energy. compared to transmitting waveforms over the air. We want people to look at that. Different routing approaches. Think about the Mac, not with the normal computer science metrics of latency and all, but think about it as what's the nanojoules for each operation, and what's the right nanojoule allocation? And then our instantaneous acquisition. How do you maintain knowledge so you never have to go through an acquisition loop? Performers, BAE Systems used to be APTI, BBN again, GE, General Dynamics, HRL, Raytheon, and Westcom. A lot of them are here. They'll talk a couple seconds about what they're doing. And then last, disruption-tolerant networking. Most of our models for tactical networks are derived from office networks. As a computer guy, I could say, well, no one would use TCP over tactical networks with dropouts. But at the same time, everybody wants to use web-based applications and all. What do they end up doing? They end up using TCP. So the reality, we have a whole community which thinks of these ad hoc networks as looking like their office LAN, or even like their 802.11 network. We did some work with a program called Future Combat Systems. Really good technology, highly directional links, it's Raytheon program. But when you looked at the outage from a comm guy, they're pretty good. We had 50% connectivity, 10 seconds in or out, let's say. Well, that's really good from comm considering the environment. But if you put TCP over something that's in and out every 10 seconds, it looks pretty bad. So in disruption-tolerant networking, we really wanted to look at what would be some of the sources of challenge to our networks as we truly move from a wired hub-spoke to ad hoc MANET-type architectures. We don't necessarily see continuous end-to-end paths. This program originated at NASA as part of interplanetary networking, and it's in the IETF as IETF research group as delay tolerant, and they were trying to basically build a store and forward architecture where if you, you couldn't get all the way to the Mars rover, you would get to the orbiter in Mars, and when it got connectivity, it would pass the message on, and it would do it as part of the network infrastructure rather than doing it in the application infrastructure. We took a look at that and said, boy, that's really cool, but doesn't go far enough because we in DoD don't have celestial mechanics, but we have UAVs flying over. One of the things Vint Cerf's implemented is they use in Iceland snowmobiles that drive around. And as snowmobiles go by people's houses, it dumps traffic on the snowmobile and picks it up again. You can't predict the snowmobile, but you opportunistically use it. And that's one of the enhancements we wanted to make. We also thought about the networking. If you've looked at the work we've done, at least in MANETs, most of the focus has been on how the MANET operates. How do you make a MANET route within itself? And we've been fairly successful. We've got a lot of people are writing lots of dissertations and fighting over it, so it must have been successful. But the next question is, if I build tactical systems that are built on MANETs and tactical systems use other MANETs as their point of contact, how does the extra net to those MANETs handle it? How many changes in homing, routing, and dressing occur? How do I have delay name services for a network that's maybe not connected at all? And so it really opened up a lot of challenges, all of which we kind of bundled together and packaged as part of disruption tolerant. We'll have a BAA out in the next couple days. Really looking for some inputs here from the academic community. A number of you were there because you've all pestered me on where the BAA is. And so what we do here essentially is create a network infrastructure that does store and forward. So we break the IP paradigm. If you get a packet, or you get a message and you can't send it on, you don't throw it away, you store it, and you learn how to pass it on, and so you walk through progressive custody transfers to a network, and you tolerate the fact that there is some delay. That delay could be down in milliseconds. One of our programs is optical communication, spatial optical comm. Atmospheric scintillation may get in the way. In that case, we're only interested in storing forward across 10 or 20 milliseconds. In the case of celestial mechanics, it might be the rotation around Mars until an orbiter on the far side of Mars. But you build into the mechanism a concept of custodian. You really challenge everything that was in the internet. You think about it. If you read Esquire magazine in December, they really found it fun that Vint Cerf, who was creator of original IP, was also the creator of this, which really challenges all the assumptions of IP. We have only local node and topology awareness rather than global. We don't have end-to-end connectivity. Incredibly complex network elements. But again, the premise of IP of that network elements had to be simple is really no longer a valid premise. The network takes responsibility for delivery rather than the application. So an application can send something to the network and leave it. It doesn't have to hang on like with TCP. until that that delivery is satisfied. We moved to an information-based bundle rather than a packet, and we felt one of the important things was to make it trusted. We can never put trust back into IP. That drains off the station. But this bundle mechanism we could put trust into. So we're looking at, these are the technologies we're looking at. First of all, just to build a bundle, we're going to be funding Jet Propulsion Lab, MITRE, and Source Crew to continue the work of the IETF's delay tolerant networking. And then we want to layer on top of that, I think, some exciting research areas. First of all, fuzzy scheduling. We have real uncertainty about what will happen. We're talking about not routing about what we know today, but what we think might happen in the next millisecond, second, and up to days. And so the network has to be able to form hypotheses about what might happen. And they're not decorrelated hypotheses. I might have a UAV fly over, I want to grab that, or I might have a vehicle go by and I want to cover a number of bets. Then one of those events happens, I can get rid of all those other assumptions, and those events have correlation. And so it's really a Markov process, sort of going out in time and consuming resources. Policy cognitive operation. Boy, there's a lot of best choices to make because I can split the network, split the packet, and go multiple ways. I can sit and wait forever. We hypothesized that you could build lots of algorithms. You want to maybe use the routing, how much battery power is in a node. So you might want to hypothesize an open biggest battery first type protocol to replace OSPF. But that would be the wrong answer. Because what we don't want to do is imagine hundreds of different special tuned routing algorithms. We want people to go and look at what is a mechanism which will allow applications nodes to cooperate and fuse their knowledge to come up with the right routing algorithm in a policy-based framework rather than a code-based framework. All the routing algorithms and all the network methods we have today are code-based. And so what we want in this area is to start looking at how can I collaborate on putting together policy cognitive so I have very simple code and perhaps very complex policies. Obviously, a lot lifted from the XG program. Here's an extension of that technology so that the bundle can bring some policies, the node can bring policies. The semantic web is meant to be a collaborative framework here. We allow people to collaborate on how the network operates and how it uses these resources. Because there's no one god of everything in the network, what the condition of the battery is, how important the bundle is. Here's a way to collaborate on doing that. And then lastly, deferred and hierarchical address binding. We want MNAs. We want things to be dynamic. We want them to jump all over the network. But we have network-wide name services. You have to be present to have name services. If we're really going to have everyone's cufflink become a radio and all these devices and we want them to have IP addresses, then think about the namespace. And so we want to look at ways to do deferred addressing. I want to launch stuff through a network and not necessarily have resolved all of the addressing and the delivery path end-to-end. So those are research areas. Here I'm actually here to recruit you as much as anything. But we're going to be working these areas. We're going to be looking for some relatively near to midterm solutions. They have even more profound impacts if you look out in the longer frame, like in this NSF program. DTN, we're funding JPL, we're funding MITRE, and then we'll have a new BAA coming out real soon. So what I want to do is Joe had invited some of our performers, not yet. Joe had invited some of our performers to come and talk specifically, but for those who weren't, I wanted to give them a couple seconds to talk about what they're doing. And then put one more plug in. If you really think this stuff's cool, come to DARPA. For XG, Mark's going to talk later. EVN's going to talk later. GE, you want to say anything about what you're doing?
Oh, I'm from GE.
Yeah, I know you are.
No, we have a poster in the other room describing some of the techniques that we're doing. We're combining multiple hypothesis testing to reduce headers, it's all to reduce power. We're looking at emergent synchronization techniques. Approaching it from a bunch of different areas. The idea is to squeeze out overhead, especially reducing protocol overhead, minimize energy. So
what happens if I use a script? I meant him for connectionless.
Go ahead.
But he answered for connectionless. Raytheon, you guys want? No, we're doing XG.
Well, I'm Gary Lutke with Raytheon. Is time for that. We need to make sure the underlying concepts are working well. Once we get that nailed, then you can start talking about optimization. The other piece that we're working on is the adaptive waveform piece, and that is a lot of fun. We have, if you talk about the funding within our program, it's not as much as the XG piece, but the opportunities that it provides for sending a lot of data very quickly and taking available spectrum and really having a diverse waveform, I think this is a lot of fun. So that's where we might start talking about a little optimization early on. We welcome any input, any thoughts. My name's in the book. Send me an email. Send me some of your ideas. Some of you talked to me already. There's lots of opportunities.
Okay. And I've told all these guys that they participate. Sometimes people worry if I do this, will the customer be bad? I've told all my guys, I really encourage them to participate in the NSF program. So if they fit your team, grab them. Bill?
My name is Bill Heisey. I'm from Lockheed Martin. We have one of the XG system integration activities. We're going to get a team with a couple parts of General Dynamics and Lucid Technologies. We think we have a rather different innovative approach using an agent-based approach for collaborative sensing and then autonomous negotiation of those resources, autonomous allocation of those resources. So as I previously mentioned, policy is an important part of this. Both from the point of view of setting what's allowed, but also in terms of monitoring performance relative to those policies. And then another big piece of this is the sensing and the characterization algorithm. So those are all areas that, as part of the XG program, we're interested in looking at other ideas to augment those. I also have IRD programs that go on within our business. Two of them this year that we're focused on are directional, using directional antennas in a cognitive network. How do you go about doing that? What are the challenges? So we're taking the XG to the directional net antenna type area. And also, XG, you heard about the policy, you heard DTN has policy. We're taking a look at a higher level policy. What do you got to do to pull all these different things together and start looking at, potentially even things like meta policies, a higher level kind of policy. So those are two areas that at least we're focusing in. And, one great way is to leverage NSF funding to augment those IRB efforts. So I'm open to discussions on those.
Good, thanks. Connectionless, BBN is going to talk later. GE, I miscued already. Raytheon?
Rob Lane, Raytheon IIS here at Falls Church. We are taking a systems engineering approach for innovation, looking at the radio itself, as well as the networking layer, elimination of the MAC, work with various team members to get 316 times performance. We're in the process, we've done a lot of innovations at this point. We're in the process of now starting our models and simulations to see which one of these innovations are going to pan out and how we're going to put this together as a full system. So we're taking a look at individual components and pulling it together as a full system. To fall back on some of the other stuff, you're talking about SCS comms, Raytheon IIS was also a part of that. We did we're the lead on it. It was 72 megabits per second when we demonstrated in that A environment out in Boise, which was absolutely battlefield type conditions, very rigorous conditions, where we actually had directional antennas, directional routing as well. So we had some capability there as a system integrator, working with various groups of individuals. We have to talk with you.
HRL,
I'm Bo Ryu from HR and Laboratory. We used to be Hughes Research Labs, and now we are owned by Boeing, Raytheon, and GM. So if you think it's fun for working for your own company, think about working for three companies. And if you want to know more about it, let me know. we're working with Raytheon on XG program, as well as we're a part of the CN, the Network Networks program. And it's basically falls into what Chris talked about, collapsing all the layers from the protocol side in terms of radio, how we can do quick turn-off and turn-on without maintaining the states and in a power-efficient way so that the radio can save a lot of power in the absence of any useful message transmitted. So certainly we are interested in getting new ideas from universities. And in fact, our team includes our university. UCLA is part of the team member. So yeah, please feel free to talk to me if you are interested in collaborating with us.
And I think the last performer I have here is a BAE.
I'm Chip Edwards with BAE Systems, and we're working on the connectionless as well. We're also on the Wolfpack program. They mentioned that big radio. I think that's going to be tied to my leg the rest of my career, probably.
At least as long as I'm around.
I can't seem to escape it. But on connectionless, if you take a look from physical on up, there are a number of, we're looking at everything that's not an information debt, and how do I get rid of it? But some of those things are trades. For instance, if you have a training sequence, that costs you some transmit power, but it also helps out the receiver. So you're trading off, do I spend a joule here? Do I spend a joule or some MIPS here? But we're looking at some ways. If we first look at the training sequence, you say your receiver starts out blind. It might have time information because we have a very active clock, but it doesn't know a lot about the channel. So how can we start out with an easy problem that the receiver can work on and then get progressively harder? So that's one of the things we're doing. If we look at the next step, in these overhead bits, it's taking a look at the header, and especially the address bits, and how can we eliminate overt address bits? And one idea is to use, instead of an overt address, pick a channel that might tell you who you are. Again, that costs more in the receiver side. The receiver side's got to search more, but it may help us a little bit with making Shannon happy versus helping and letting Moore help us out some in the long run. Also looking at the nice thing about if we have big addresses, there's a lot of neat features that you can do with big address space. You don't have to be efficient there. We sure would like to find ways to provide those features, but keep the energy consumption low. With respect to routing, we're working with energy efficient routing protocols and look at both capacity, energy capacity of the node, as well as the cost of links. And also, the cost of links is also dependent on not just path loss, but also interference and things like that. And finally, that other trade of if I'm a node, I have to invest some energy to tell my network about me, but that helps the network more efficiently route. So there's another trade that you have to make is when, as a node, do I decide to let my network know things? So those are the kind of things we're
working on. Thank you, Joe, for the opportunity to present our programs. Obviously, I'm looking to see if we can get some synergy in the future between the work we've got funded now and the work being contemplated. Thank you very much.
Good. Let's see here.
Now we're
here. Yeah.